One of the most unique aspects of this book is the makeup of its contributors. They include scholars and colleagues, students and family of C.S. Lewis.
I'm William O'Flaherty. Thank you for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Many of you know that Lewis taught at Oxford, but did you know about the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society that was created years after his death? My guest today is very much aware of this fact. Although he is from the United States, Dr. Roger White has presented in Oxford and other places about Lewis. He is here today to tell us about a book he co-edited entitled C.S. Lewis and His Circle, Essays and Memoirs from the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society. Welcome to All About Jack, Roger.
Hello, William. Thank you for having me.
Well, now, there are many books that are collections of essays about Lewis. While your subtitle does provide a partial answer to this question, let's go ahead and address what makes this book unique among them.
I think one of the most unique aspects of this book is the makeup of its contributors. They include scholars and colleagues, students and family of C.S. Lewis. The formal essays and the informal reminiscences that they contribute, they all originated at meetings of the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society, and so they bring an assortment of perspectives and levels of engagement with the life and work of C.S. Lewis and his circle. You know, one of the very first essay collections about Lewis came out in 1965, just a couple of years after Lewis's death, and that was 50 years ago here in 2015. It's called Light on Lewis by Jocelyn Gibb. Jocelyn Gibb was a publisher, I worked with a publisher company that C.S. Lewis did his books through. So Jocelyn Gibb put together one of the very earliest collections of essays. And then there was another pretty widely distributed book called C.S. Lewis at the Breakfast Table by James Comeau. And that came out in 1979. And it also had a lot of essays in it by people who actually knew Lewis. So one of the things that Light on Lewis and C.S. Lewis at the Breakfast Table had in common was how many contributors they had who actually knew Lewis. There have been a few others, but those were some of the earliest ones. And so this C.S. Lewis and his circle is fairly unique this far along that to still be able to find original voices that can speak into the life and work of Lewis.
Well, now, how did you become involved in this project? And tell us a little bit more about yourself, like where you teach and other duties you have at your university.
Well, my wife and I, we both work at Azusa Pacific University, and that's in the Los Angeles area. I'm a curator in the Special Collections and Rare Books area of the University Library, but I'm also a professor in the Ministry Department at the Azusa Pacific Seminary. It was back in 2007 to 2009, my wife and I worked with our university study abroad program, which was in Oxford. My wife directed the program, and I taught classes on C.S. Lewis's perspectives on education. So it was during that time that I began attending the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society, and that's where I met Judith and Brandon Wolfe. Now, they're the co-editors of the book. At the time, they were doctoral students and officers at the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society. Well, Brendan approaches me one day with an idea that he and Judith had about turning a box of old audio tapes, recordings from the C.S. Lewis meetings, taking those and turning them into a book. I remember him asking me, do you think there's a book here? Well, there was, and that's how the book started. I'm very fortunate to be able to work with Judith and Brendan. They were both officers of the society. And in fact, they've edited some other collections, some other essay collections about Lewis, very fine ones. They edited C.S. Lewis's Perelandra, Reshaping the Image of the Cosmos. That was in 2013. And then in 2011, they also did a Festschrift for Walter Hooper called C.S. Lewis and the Church, Essays in Honor of Walter Hooper. So a lot of it was their brainchild to come up and take these audio tapes and turn them into a book. And they brought me on board to do some of the legwork and to work with them on this project.
Let's consider the contents of the book next. How is it arranged and who are some of the authors of the pieces?
Well, we divided the book into two parts, essays and memoirs. The essays are a little more formal, academic. The memoirs are a little more informal and reminiscences. Both of them, though, have the feel and the sound of a presentation to a live audience. We kept that in the editing of the book, and so you get that as you're reading it. Each of those two sections, the essays and the memoirs, are also then divided into subsections. The essay section has a subsection called Philosophy and Theology, and then another subsection called Literature. The memoirs section, it's divided into two smaller subsections. The first, Memories of C.S. Lewis from his family and friends, and then the other, Memories of the Inklings. These areas have world-renowned scholars, family members, colleagues, and friends addressing different topics spread throughout these chapters.
Well, now, with the book, as you're noting it, being divided into two parts, and as you also just said, into two subsections, let's explore a little of each. In part one, which you mentioned is Essays, Philosophy, and Theology, will you pick maybe one or two pieces to share some summary points about what the reader will learn?
Yeah, that first section, we have a couple of really choice contributors. We start out the book with Alistair McGrath, who has recently published a string of Lewis-related books just in the last few years, a very fine biography, analysis of an intellectual thought work of Lewis. But in this particular chapter that he has in our book, he talks about Lewis as an apologist and a defender of the faith. I'll read just a portion here for you to give you a sense of how he approaches the topic. McGrath writes, Lewis's remarkable genius lies partly in his taking some core Augustinian ideas and recrafting them in a way that's suitable for our own period. The Augustinian idea that God has created us for himself and therefore that we will always be dissatisfied and restless until we relate to God is clearly seminal to Lewis. Likewise, Lewis also draws on Augustine's argument, it is easy for a desire for God to become falsely attached to transient, finite, and created objects. And for Lewis, that can only lead to sadness and frustration. This divinely created dissatisfaction is designed to make us ask where there is anything or anyone that is finally able to satisfy this emptiness. And for Lewis, this could only happen by God's grace and through God's presence. So end the reading there. McGrath spends his whole chapter talking about Lewis's approach to presenting a very viable defense of the Christian faith using some of those Augustinian ideas in his presentation. A second chapter in this section that I like to feature is by Elizabeth Anscombe. Elizabeth Anscombe was a philosopher who debated C.S. Lewis at the Socratic Club. This is mentioned a lot in biographies of Lewis, and they had quite an exchange over some of his reasoning in a book called Miracles. They went back and forth in the debate, the live debate, but then afterwards they exchanged ideas in print through the Socratic Journal. Well, she's written about it a few times, and there are a few places he's mentioned it, but as a result of that debate, Lewis rewrote one of the chapters in Miracles, in his book Miracles, is chapter 3. And while Anscombe has briefly commented on that in an anthology of her work, basically saying that it was he's made some substantive changes, she's not done any extensive response to Lewis's rewrite. And so in C.S. Lewis and His Circle, we have Elizabeth Anscombe's response to Lewis's rewrite of the third chapter of Miracles. And basically what she does is she analyzes some of his argumentation that he uses to argue against naturalism. It's a very complex chapter. I mean, you need to really be familiar with the book Miracles, and it helps to know some of their back and forth. But this continues a historical conversation that started way back at that Socratic Club meeting. And to have this kind of material this far along come to light and to be more widely available, I think is another one of the benefits of this book, really rescuing this kind of material from just ending up being lost somewhere.
I was very pleased when I when you gave me an advanced copy of the book to see that in there. I have tried to read all of Lewis. I don't claim to like have the best understanding of that controversy, just in terms of the differences in the argument. But I was very pleased that something like this was there. I do want to note, though, having said that, that while this book does have a lot of great material for people who are very, very familiar with Lewis, it also has some good, insightful things for the more casual Lewis reader, for them to get exposed to some other things. So, again, that material with Anscombe was I was very pleased to see that it did come to surface in this book. Well, now in the next in the first part on essays are five selections related to literature. Again, can you select one or two articles and some of the interesting information that is conveyed?
Yeah, again, I keep going back to the contributors in this book and the really fine chapters that we have from these authors. We were able to include a chapter written by Rowan Williams, the former Archbishop of Canterbury. He did an analysis of one of Lewis's science fiction works called That Hideous Strength. And he does an entire assessment of the book. And it's a fascinating, even if you haven't read the book, he does such a fine job introducing the themes, the characters, the plot line, and then commenting on the strengths and weaknesses of it. It's a very fine analysis. And whether you have read the book and many, many times, or you've never read the book, I think this is one of the chapters in this subsection that is very accessible to all readers. There are a number of chapters that, both in the first section and in the second section, that address Lewis's the themes of faith, reason, emotion, and imagination. In the first section, Stephen Logan, a lecturer at Clare College in Cambridge, does a chapter on the limits of reason. And then Callistus Ware, who is an English bishop of the Eastern Orthodox Church, does a very fine chapter on sacramentalism and the idea of seeing behind things and through things and how God is so evident and in the creation around us. And then in this literature section, there's a chapter by Malcolm Guite, who is a chaplain at Girton College in Cambridge. These three chapters really work together very nicely because they talk about these different aspects of how reason and emotion and imagination interrelate, and particularly how Lewis treats those ideas and how he lived out those ideas. So I really recommend reading those three together. One of them just happens to be in the literature section because it focuses more on Lewis's writings reflecting yearning for a distant land. But the earlier two we put in the philosophy and theology section because they took more of that angle at looking at those subjects.
Oh, that's fascinating. Now, as you noted, and I was mentioning as well, the second part of the book, which is again called C.S. Lewis and His Circle, is Memoirs. That's the name of the second half. The first subdivision is about Lewis and his family and friends. You can, mention, all of the different titles if you like, but what are some of the treats in store for the reader here?
The section of Memoirs is particularly noteworthy because of the contributors. Joan Murphy was a cousin of C.S. Lewis. George Sayre was a former student of Lewis. Ronald Head was the vicar at the church where Lewis and his brother attended. And then Peter Bide was the priest who conducted a marriage ceremony for Lewis and Joy in the hospital. Now, that section ends out with Stella Aldwinkle, who was the founder of the Oxford Socratic Club. She's the one that started that club, and I mentioned that earlier with Elizabeth Anscombe and Lewis first debated there. Each of these contributors gives a very personal account of what it was like to know and interact with Lewis. And they give some very touching accounts in their chapters. Joan Murphy talks about what it was like to have Lewis and his brother together with the family, telling stories, going out to play, exploring the area mountains and hills. George Sayer talks about what it was like to be a student of Lewis and how intimidating that could be. He also tells a fascinating story of how he once got in trouble and he went and asked Lewis for help to help him sort it out. And it's a very humorous exchange where Lewis comes back and says, "Well, you were in the wrong there," and then gives us some advice on how to proceed. Ronald Head tells what it was like to go over and to the kilns where Lewis lived and to actually do a home visit, and what it was like to walk in and to encounter W.H. Lewis, that's Lewis's brother, or Joy, Lewis's wife. And he speaks one time of walking in and they're playing Scrabble, and he says, "Boy, you have to really watch when you're invited to play a game of Scrabble at the Lewis home, because they could be playing in Latin or Anglo-Saxon or Old English." So he warns the reader about that. Peter Bide was the vicar who married Joy and Lewis in the hospital. You may have seen the movie Shadowlands. This is his account of what actually happened, and he fills out the story by giving some background on an event that took place in a nearby parish that he was involved in, that involved the healing of a young boy that he had prayed for. Lewis heard about this and invited Peter Bide over to visit, and to his surprise, that's when Lewis asked him if he would marry Joy. So Peter Bide goes through what it was like to be asked that right on the spot, and he unpacks some of his thoughts about whether to do that or not, because there was some controversy about Lewis marrying Joy. The last chapter there is, again, is Stella Aldwinkle, and she gives the wonderful accounts of what it was like to walk into a Socratic Club meeting, to have the room packed with students, to have so many people in the room that they actually had to move to a larger venue in the college, quickly moving up to the dining hall, and all the tables had to be cleared just to make room for the speakers one night. So all of these are firsthand accounts that are just not captured, that aren't really available very often anymore. And so to be able to capture these and include them in the book, I think, is one of the real benefits for readers with this volume.
Yeah, and those last two chapters there, I didn't get a chance to read all of the book, but I did read those, and those were especially, I found interesting, you know, being familiar with Lewis's life and then, you know, catching more details about certain aspects that either haven't been available, or especially, like you say, to get that first-hand person account like this book does provide. Well, now, the final subsection in this second half, it's Memoirs of the Inklings. There's four chapters here, and while you can tell us what the other three pieces are, I'm especially interested in you elaborating on the talk that is from Owen Barfield.
This section of the Memories of the Inklings is, I think, particularly unique because it includes the actual voices of Inklings members, Owen Barfield and John Wayne. Some of you people may not have heard of John Wayne, the Inkling. He spells his name different from the movie actor. But we have two chapters written by him. I'll talk more about them in a moment. But the section starts out with Walter Hooper giving his kind of overview of the story of the Inklings. This is the second chapter that Walter Hooper has in the book. He includes another chapter in the literature section where he gives an overview of the making of the C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia. So those are two very readable chapters. The second one in the Memories of the Inklings is written by Owen Barfield. That's the one that you'd asked about. And Barfield is concerned in that chapter about how he is perceived sometimes, and how Lewis is sometimes perceived, particularly as viewers look at the other through the work of the former. So by that I mean, sometimes people would attribute to Barfield things that Barfield didn't necessarily believe, but Lewis said or wrote or believed. And sometimes people would attribute to Lewis things that Barfield had written or said or believed. And Barfield is trying to sort that out for the reader and gives a number of examples of things that were ways that he and Lewis were alike and ways that he and Lewis were different. The two last chapters in this section, both by that other Inkling called John Wayne, I think these are some of my favorite chapters in the book, again, because this is an Inkling talking about other Inklings. One of the chapters, John Wayne is talking about W.H. Lewis, which is Lewis's brother, and he reports what a fine man he was. The last chapter that John Wayne wrote is his analysis of Neville Coghill and C.S. Lewis and their Irish heritage. And in it, he looks at both men and assesses how they brought some of their Irishness with them when they came and lived in England, but also how England was absorbed into the individuals themselves. So it's a wonderful insight into these two men and how their culture influenced how they thought and how they lived, even to the point of it impacting how John Wayne thought about himself and about his own work.
Having now covered so much ground about the book, let's briefly venture away from it and have you tell how someone can attend a meeting of the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society. Of course, they have to be in England, I'm sure, but give us some details further.
Yeah, meetings of the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society, they're held every Tuesday at 8:15 during the term time at Oxford University. It's at a place called Pusey House, just a few doors down from the Eagle and Child pub where the Inklings met. Anyone may attend society meetings. Typically, that includes college students and faculty members, community residents, and very often just simply first-time visitors to the city. The group focuses on the life and work and thought of C.S. Lewis and the intellectual and spiritual colleagues he knew and admired. That interest usually translates into looking at themes related to Christianity and culture and the imagination. And this is all done through the lenses of theology and literary criticism, philosophy, or poetry. So to learn more about the society, you can find and visit their website simply by Googling Oxford C.S. Lewis Society. And there you can find the speaker schedule and you can learn about how to become a member of the society. By the way, there's several levels of associate membership, so you don't actually have to live in Oxford to become a member and to benefit from some of the features that they offer to members. You can also learn how to subscribe to the Journal of Inkling Studies, which is happens to be edited by the two co-editors of this book, and that's Judith and Brandon Wolfe. If you want to learn more about the history of Oxford C.S. Lewis Society, there's also a foreword in the book that tells about how the society started, and it's written by the two co-founders, whose names are Suzanne and Gregory Wolfe, no relation to Judith and Brenda. And then in the afterword of the book, you can read the brief history of the society written by longtime member Michael Ward. And some of you will know him as the author of Planet Narnia and the co-editor of the Cambridge Companion to C.S. Lewis. So there's no reservations required if you want to attend an Oxford C.S. Lewis Society meeting.
And I'll have a link in the show notes for people to get to the page and stuff. So that'll be helpful for those who are in England, or if they want to be an associate type member, they can look those details up as well. Well, now, returning to the book itself, are there any interesting, maybe behind-the-scenes stories about editing the book or the original talks themselves? I can imagine cassettes that are a few years old might be in need of some restoration before you can really even listen to them. Anything like that?
It was quite a process to put this book together because, as you say, some of the audio tapes were not the best quality. And thankfully, someone had enough foresight just to turn on the tape recorder. I'm thankful, William, for what you're doing, because you're saving history yourself, doing oral histories and getting interviews. And in some ways, that's what this book is about, trying to save these fine memories and talks from just disappearing. And so the process to go through and cull from these almost 200 audio tapes the very best to turn into a book was quite an adventure. Some of the tapes we would digitize the tapes, we would transcribe some of them. Some of them were very hard, they were almost inaudible, but particularly the Elizabeth Anscombe one, I had listened to that thing probably hundreds and hundreds of times trying to capture what she was saying. And fortunately, when we sought out her estate, her daughter is still alive, and so we were able to go through her daughter and son-in-law, who, in reviewing the manuscript for consideration in the book, were able to locate the notes that Elizabeth Anscombe had used the night that she spoke at the society. And so they were able to fill in some of the gaps and make sure that we had the very best essay that we could from Anscombe. So that and other adventures of just trying to find the estates of some of these contributors who are no longer alive or family members, and how gracious many of them were to know that these things, the thoughts of their family members were going to be able to be recorded and in book form. I think as you read through the book, you'll again get a taste for that, particularly as you read some of the memoirs.
Very good. Well, now, this has all been very interesting. We're going to have to wrap up here. So, in closing here, could you summarize why people, again, would want to consider getting a copy of the book, C.S. Lewis and His Circle?
Whether you're a seasoned C.S. Lewis scholar or you're an enthusiastic new reader of the Chronicles of Narnia, you're going to find something of interest in this collection. It's got both ends of the spectrum there. You may never get to visit Oxford, the city where Lewis lived and the Inklings met, but for a time, just in reading this book, you'll have an idea of what it was like to attend an Oxford C.S. Lewis Society meeting. And whatever your entry point, I think you'll get a sense of what it was be like to be part of that extended circle of those who find the life and the work and the message of C.S. Lewis so compelling and inspiring.
Well, Roger, thank you for being on All About Jack.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks again for all your fine work, William.
I also want to extend thanks to you, the listener, for your interest in All About Jack, a podcast of EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, your host and the producer of the show. Be sure to check the show notes for a direct link for buying a copy of C.S. Lewis and His Circle. You'll also find links to the Oxford C.S. Lewis Society and their journal in the notes. Find those links by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com, which is the location of where the audio files are hosted. Podbean is spelled Podbean. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. If you go to the other location, EssentialCSLewis.com, you can still get to this podcast. Plus, I have a variety of other articles there as well, including a new series examining quotations alleged to be from C.S. Lewis. Plus, I also have a daily fact quote and quiz at EssentialCSLewis.com. I hope you enjoyed today's show enough to want to share it. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online and consider listening to other shows. Recent ones include a reposting of an interview I did with Max McLean about the stage production of the Screwtape Letters, and a conversation I had recently with Abigail Santa Maria about her biography on Joy Davidman. Older episodes to check out include an 8-part series I did on the book C.S. Lewis versus the New Atheist, and a chat I had with Will Voss about Volume 1 of his book C.S. Lewis's Top 10. Again, you can hear those and others by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, that's info at EssentialCSLewis.com. Finally, did you know that you can help to make sure this podcast is freely available to all? You can become a patron of this podcast, and that helps to make sure it continues. There is a link in the show notes about this, and pledges start at only $1 a month with some great rewards.